Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Clear in the Crease podcast. Thank you so much for downloading the latest episode. I'm your host, Dennis Cox. Thank you again for downloading the latest edition of Clear in the Crease podcast. Sorry for the long layoff between episodes. I've had some personal issues, some illness, family matters, along with some job changes going on in my personal life. So I've had to take some time to devote to those things. So unfortunately, I have not been able to get to you. But I'm so happy to be back here on the airways, here on Clear in the Crease. A lot of things I want to get to this week. First, I want to inform you of a few things. Again, our new website is clearingthecrease.com. If you haven't visited, check it out. We've got some new blog posts that are going to be coming up soon, along with some new stories I'm going to be covering. I'm going to be heading out to the Duke-UNC men's lacrosse game on Sunday, March 29th. I'll be there watching that, as well as follow us on Twitter at CTC Podcast. Also, you can find us on Facebook. Clearing the Crease Podcast is the name of the page. Also, want to let you know, this Sunday is WrestleMania. That's right, WrestleMania 31. Here on Clearing the Crease Podcast, we will have a special edition of Clearing the Crease, previewing WrestleMania 31. That's right. WWE is something I enjoy. I just really mostly enjoy pro wrestling, but I do follow the WWE. Please download and listen to our special podcast that'll be coming out for WrestleMania. I'm going to be previewing the card. We'll be talking about some of the matches that are coming up. Got a lot of interesting matches we're going to be seeing. We have the first time we're going to see Sting. Undertaker, coming off his first WrestleMania loss, is going to be wrestling against Bray Wyatt. We have a lot of things we want to get into. I'm really excited about this year's WrestleMania. So please listen to our WrestleMania podcast, a special edition of Clearing the Crease that'll be coming out right after this one. Now, with March Madness going on, we have a lot of NCAA topics I want to get into, but lacrosse season in the college level is in mid-season, all right? We're in mid-season of the college lacrosse. Also, high school seasons are getting underway. You have to have some fresh-looking swag. You need to go check out reflexlacrosse.com. That's right, reflexlacrosse.com. Get some fresh new apparel that'll take you into those summer club seasons and club tournaments all the way into the fall year. Reflexlacrosse.com is the place to go. Now, for our first story I want to get into is I just want to talk about a little bit my personal opinions when it comes to coaching philosophy, because a lot of people have been making some noise about the pace of play in college basketball. Now, a few weeks ago, the head men's basketball coach at Iona just said that basically that the college basketball game stinks. That's basically what he said. He said college basketball stinks. He says 90% of the teams at the NBA and at the NCAA level basically run the same stuff. Now, Tim Clues is the name of the Iona coach. He told a New York Times article back last month. He says, quote, "What's happened? We've accepted mediocrity. How many teams play different now? If you look at it, there are probably 10 to 15 offensive sets that 90% of Division I and NBA teams run in one form or another," end quote. Now, he's right to an extent. Now, being from Virginia, growing up there, I watched the UVA-Michigan State game in the round of 32, I like to say, because I don't think it is a third-round game, nevertheless. But it was very much a physical, slower pace. Each possession was going down into the single digits on the shot clock. It was a good game, competitive game, but at times it was a little bit hard to watch because of the pace of play. Now, last night I got to watch Kentucky versus West Virginia, and Kentucky was basically an NBA team. I think they could beat the 76ers or give them a run. Just go up and down the court on WVU. And I'm thinking to myself, it's like, well, there's some pros and cons to both ways of playing. One, each coach wants to be efficient. They want to maximize their players. Also, they want guys that fit their system. Some coaches like to let their players be creative, but sometimes there's pros and cons to each. If you like to play a slow-paced game, I'm just speaking from my experience from having played and coached college across. If you want to play that efficient, slower-paced game, that's fine. But if you fall behind, it's a lot harder for your team to speed up because they're not used to that style of play. Now, in the case of teams that like to open up and get up and down the court, sometimes it's hard for them to slow down and be efficient when time calls for it. So there's pros and cons to both. I found if you have the players that have mentally have the ability to be creative but also are instinctual and understand what the situation is, they understand the score, the time, time in the game, if you just got done playing a lot of defense, you know, valuing possession when the time calls for it, recognizing opportunities. If you're able to teach those players those things and concepts, if you can give them a structure to play with them and let them be creative within that structure, I think that's when players truly can excel. Because in my opinion, players want to be creative. They want to be instinctual. I found when I was coaching and also when I was a player, if you give players a lot of set plays. Let's say, for example, this has happened to me before, and I've seen coaches do this. They, in a practice, they'll work 20 to 30 minutes on one set play. And they may run that play twice, three times in a game. So these players are getting frustrated over having, and the coach is getting frustrated about players' positioning, being at a certain place at a certain time. And then when it comes to a game, they run that play two or three times. And I always send their questions, like, why are we going to spend 30 minutes of practice, especially if it's a two-hour practice, you're basically spending 25% of practice for a play that you're going to run three times over a course of a 60-minute game. Now, it's good to have plays if you need them, but there's so many other things you can be working on. Is that you can teach, it's like, okay, when you force a turnover and it's a three-on-two, you know, spacing, positioning, because if you beat a defender one-on-one, it's basically you have a man advantage, so you're reading and reacting. That's what I figured out when I was coaching, is that if I teach these players how to read and react and understand situations, okay, if it's a four-on-four coming down the field, or is it a five-on-four, is it a four-against-five, is it unsettled situations, those different things, because those are what dominates a game. At least at the lacrosse, I'm speaking specifically lacrosse, unsettled situations are what controls the game. So if you can master the unsettled situations, 6-on-6 or 7-on-7 in the women's game will take care of itself eventually. My last year of coaching college lacrosse, we set every offensive record, individually, team, goals, assists, points per game, all those things. We set all those records offensively, and I ran two offensive sets, and we had two set plays that we used maybe once every two or three games. But it was mostly teaching my players how to play, to be creative, understanding situations, transition, those kinds of things. And they excelled in it. But you have to have the players that are capable of doing that. If you don't have the players that are capable of being instinctual and creative, then you have to have that structure. And that's just up to the coach of playing to the strengths of their players. Now, there's coaches who want to be structured all the time, and they find players that fit their system, which is fine. If it works for them, it works for them. They're paid to win games. So a lot of different debate going on right now about the pace of play in college basketball. There's a lot of debate with that recently in college lacrosse. They've made some good rule changes. The pace of play is back up. There's more transition in the men's lacrosse game right now. Like to see a little bit more of it in the women's game. But overall, I think the college basketball is pretty good. I like to see a shorter shot clock, but that's just my opinion. And I think it's an opinion shared by many. Go down to 30 seconds or 28 seconds. 35 seconds is a little too long for men's basketball. Let's see it. I want to see that change. All right, sticking with the NCAA, if you guys remember back years ago, this before Pete Carroll left the University of Southern California, USC, to become the head football coach for the Seattle Seahawks. The school was under NCAA investigation for illegal benefits that were given to Reggie Bush, amongst other players. Reggie Bush was stripped of its Heisman. Remember correctly, USC was stripped of its national championship, I believe from 2004, just because from improper benefits. I mean, it was like cars, houses, money, all kinds of stuff that were paid to players and their families. But now the NCAA is being sued by former USC running backs coach Todd McNair. Now, Todd McNair, you probably never have heard his name before, It's because, well, he was the running back coach. You know, USC had obviously Pete Carroll, Lane Kiffin was there. Lane Kiffin came back to be their head coach, and now they have Steve Sarkisian. But McNair has filed a lawsuit against the NCAA, and I'm going to go ahead and read from papers that were filed with the U.S. District Court in Los Angeles just the other day. I'm going to read straight from the documents. It's 497 pages, so basically it's a 500 pages worth of documentation. And basically he's alleging, quote, again, reading from the documents, is, as detailed herein, the NCAA fabricated facts, violated its own procedures, rules, and bylaws, allowed improper influence over the deliberations, allowed evidence outside the record to be considered during the deliberations, failed to inform McNair, again, Tom McNair, the coach, that he was the target of the investigation before interviewing him, and also, continuing on later, as further set forth below, the NCAA defamed McNair when it found that he engaged in unethical conduct based on its blatant and deliberate fabrication of the facts. Further, the NCAA is wrong in claiming that McNair voluntarily injected himself into a matter of public interest sufficient to make him a limited public figure. He did no such thing. Rather, it was the NCAA that thrust McNair into this matter and not the other way around. In any event, even if McNair were a limited public figure, there is ample evidence from which a jury could infer that the NCAA acted with malice. After all, it was told point blank that the facts on which it was relying were made up and were not supported by anything in the record. Nevertheless, it persisted. What occurred here is malice personified. So, Tom McNair has a defamation suit against the NCAA. Basically, what he is saying is that some of the reports that were filed with the NCAA, the facts in those reports were falsified. They were fabricated. Some people that were spoken to, agents that were spoken to by the NCAA, that were interviewed, have said, no, I didn't say what the NCAA said I said. I know it's kind of a weird way of saying things. But there is a... there is an agency partner. They refer to in the documentation as agency partner A. The NCAA said that agency partner A phoned the assistant coach McNair to ask him to intercede with a student athlete, in this case Reggie Bush, to get him to adhere to an agency agreement. That's what the NCAA said. The agent had said, but the agent has come out and said, I never said any of those things. So McNair is suing the NCAA for defamation of character, also for libel, because the NCAA hit McNair with what's known as a show cause. Now, with a show cause in the NCAA, you're not allowed to coach. You're not allowed to coach because of fear, or basically because of if you have major rules violations. So what the NCAA wants is, people that want to hire him as a coach have to have a show cause as to why to bring him in. And it's a lot of loopholes and red tape to go through to hire somebody that has a show cause. That's why Jim Tressel, when he was had the investigation going on at Ohio State, when he left there, when he resigned, the NCAA hit him with a show cause. That's why he hasn't coached since. Well, now he's the president of the university at Youngstown State. That's a different story for a different day. But generally, coaches, when they have a show cause, don't ever get hired because programs don't want to have that black eye on their coaching staff. They want to make sure, you know, things look clean in the NCAA's eyes, just in case something does happen. There's a lot of things that go with it. So basically, McNair hasn't coached since 2010. When these things happen, because when Lane Kiffin was brought in, Kiffin let him go from the staff because of the show cause, because he thought he would have been a negative image against the program and the university. So just a lot of things going on with this case. But I think if McNair can prove this against the NCAA, NCAA is going to be in a very, very bad situation. A lot of people don't like the NCAA. They don't like where the NCAA is headed. I personally think the NCAA is too reactionary. I think they need to basically take everything that they have, throw it out, and just rebuild it from scratch, built off of what today's student athletes deal with, and also what coaches having to deal with in terms of recruiting, all these other things. There's a lot of things that the NCAA needs to change, and if they're caught fabricating facts, who knows what's going to happen with the Syracuse situation with men's basketball, Jim Boeheim. Did they fabricate facts in that situation? What about some of these other programs that have had violations against them? Did the NCAA fabricate facts? If McNair can prove it against the NCAA, it's Pandora's box. This could be, if maybe potentially down the line, how this turns out. A next step where you see the quote-unquote Big 65 Division I schools breaking away from the NCAA. I wouldn't want to see that happen, but it very well could. I think it's going to happen eventually. But this is a very, very big situation with the NCAA. And if Todd McNair can prove that the NCAA fabricated facts, good luck, NCAA, because you're going to be SOL. Now we're going to switch gears a little bit. We're not going to have a out-of-bounds topic today, but I just have a short story here. The number one overall pick in the Major League Baseball draft from 2014 was a young man by the name of Brady Aiken. He came right out of high school, was drafted by the Houston Astros. He's a hard-throwing left-hander, but he hasn't been seen in a long time because he announced yesterday, Thursday, March 26th, that he is having Tommy John surgery. Now, he's 18 years old. He was pitching for the IMG Academy, which is a private institute in Florida, because he was preparing for this year's draft. Now, he was the number one overall pick, again, last year in the 2014 draft, but didn't sign with the Astros because they just basically couldn't come to an agreement. They also just had some questions about whether the Houston Astros organization was a place that he wanted to be. So the Astros drafted him anyway. They couldn't come to negotiation on a contract in time. So basically he gets re-entered into the draft. Now he's not playing college baseball this year because he decided to go to the IMG Academy. He was looking to go to UCLA because he is a Southern California kid. He is from San Diego. And unfortunately he's had some elbow troubles during high school. This was kind of known before he got drafted, yet got drafted number one overall anyway. But he had to have Tommy John surgery. Now, my fear is, well, it's not my fear. What we're seeing a lot more is a lot of young pitchers, a lot of really good young pitchers in Major League Baseball. We're seeing it with college and high school kids are having these Tommy John surgeries, and they're throwing their arms, they're throwing their elbows out, seeing a lot of rotator cuff injuries, throwing their shoulders out because they're putting a lot of strain on their body before they're able to. And this is also kind of a byproduct, in my opinion, of too many athletes sticking with one sport and one sport only. If a kid's a really good pitcher at age 13 and the only thing they're doing all year is just throwing pitches, you know, pitching twice a week, you know, three times a week, depending on their age and what they're playing. I've seen some kids have, they're talking about the parents' commands, like, oh, yeah, he plays in, like, a local league, and he has, like, a travel team, an AAU team, and, you know, he pitches, you know, like, three games over the weekend. And it's not middle relief. They're pitching, like, six innings in a game. And I'm sort of thinking to myself, I said, that's 18 innings over a weekend. I said, a pro guy throws seven and takes 4 days off. And you're throwing a kid 18 innings? I said, no wonder his arm hurts. I've heard of 14-year-old kids who are having rotator cuff and Tommy John surgery because their parents and people are overworking their arms. Play another sport. It's okay if you're be an athlete. You know, it used to be the really good athlete would play, you know, football or soccer, and then they play, you know, the basketball team, and they play baseball or lacrosse. They play a couple of those sports. I have friends who play Division I football and Division I baseball, and they play multiple sports throughout the year. And it all translated for each other. You need to give your body a break, especially if you're pitching. You have to give your body a break. I talked to one parent recently who said their son, pitched all during the spring season for their base for their summer, I'm sorry, for their high school team, and pitched all summer, and they thought about signing up for a fall league. I say, if he plays fall baseball, you better not step foot on that mound, because his body can't handle it. The kid was like 15 years old. His body can't handle pitching from February all the way through November. His body's not built for that. He's not a pro athlete. He shouldn't be pitching that much. I say, to play another sport, athleticism from one sport carries to the next. Whether it's body control, balance, core stability, it all factors in. But just to see an 18-year-old kid who was the number one overall draft pick last year, he has a bright future, having Tommy John surgery, it's just concerning. You're just seeing it a lot more. Back in, I believe it was August, Dr. James Andrews, I'm sure everyone's heard that name, who does surgeries on just about everybody, it seems like, in terms of pro and college sports, had an interview with the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and he stated, that's the biggest concern. He's operating on so many young kids, doing so many major reconstructive surgeries to all these young kids, especially baseball players. And he said specifically baseball, because of just these overuse and kids not playing multiple sports. And there's so many college coaches out there. Me as a former college coach, I'll tell you, play multiple sports. I've had recruits ask me, do you not want me to play soccer or basketball this year? I said, no. I said, you better play those sports. I said, go play them. Don't just stick with lacrosse because you have a fear that I may not accept you on the team or whatever it may be. Go play these other sports. Be a well-rounded athlete. Sadly, we lack that these days. Be a well-rounded athlete. All right, for our last story, this is involving the University of Iowa. And this is actually going to involve now Title IX. Four Iowa field hockey players, again, University of Iowa, four Iowa field hockey players have filed a federal complaint to the U.S. Department of Education, along with the Chicago branch of the Office of Civil Rights, over the firing of their former coach, Tracy Griesbaum. Now, in May of last year, two players anonymously lodged a complaint against Griesbaum and her coaching staff, alleging bullying, verbal harassment, and intimidation. They also alleged that Griesbaum was in an inappropriate relationship with another athletic department official. As a result, Gary Barta, the athletic director, investigated the claims. Now, according to Barta's emails, this is some I found on ESPN, and also I was able to read some of the investigative notes and also was able to find the complaint filed by the players to the Office of Civil Rights. I was actually able to track down that document. In emails, according to Barta's emails, he found no wrongdoing by Griesbaum. So no wrongdoing. Also on July 21st, the ESPN article said that in the email to Griesbaum that Barta thanked her for her patience and professionalism. And Barta said, my goal is to move forward and make, this is a quote from the email, my goal is to move forward and make a very good program even stronger. I want to make sure expectations are clear for all parties involved so we can continue to achieve great success and student athletes can have a terrific experience. Again, that's an email from Barta back on July 21st to Griesbaum. All right, now Griesbaum, just to let you know, was at Iowa for 14 years, had 169 wins, and over the last 3 years had a record of 42-20. So she was a successful coach, in my opinion. You win 42 games and you lose 20 over your last 3 years. That's a good record. That's good. Okay. Now on August 1st, again, this is according to ESPN, the final investigative report came out and was given to Barta with a report saying, quote, insufficient evidence. Again, insufficient evidence presented to substantiate a violation of university policy. Okay? So that was in the report. Insufficient evidence presented to substantiate a violation of university policy. The report also said that Griesbaum's relationship with former senior associate athletic director Jane Meyer was not inappropriate. Okay? So not inappropriate. Later, the report cited Griesbaum and her coaching staff for creating an environment where several players felt intimidated and pressured to play injured, but said, quote, the evidence does not rise to the level of policy violation related to harassment, again, I'll say it again, quote, the evidence does not rise to the level of policy violation related to harassment. Okay? So the report said that, okay, May felt a little intimidated to play while injured. You know, it could be a player felt that coach saying, hey, look, if you're are you injured or you're hurt, hey, you can play through that, suck it up. That happens all over the place. If you've ever played sports, you've heard that before. Okay? If you've coached sports, you probably have said that. All right? So 3 days later, Barta terminated the contract of Griesbaum, turning the team over to a longtime assistant, Lisa Salucci. The team went 11-7 last year and lost in the first round of the Big Ten tournament. So the four players, Chandler Ackers, Jesse Silfer, Natalie Cafoni, and Danny Himian. Okay, make sure I pronounce these names correctly. Hopefully I did. What they have said is that a lot of these male coaches have done similar things, and but nothing was said, nothing was made of a male coach who has treated the players to what. Now, the four players that are making this claim or have filed this complaint refer back to a few years ago when Kirk Ferentz, the head coach, of the university's football team, nothing was done with him, where about 13 players had to get sent to the hospital and get treated for basically running the players too hard, coming back from winter break, and they just pushed them so hard, and they forced players to keep running, even though they were physically, it's not because they were out of shape, but they just grinded them so hard during an off-season training workout that 13 of them had to go to the hospital and get treated. And it's a condition known as Rambo. Rombo, I think you pronounce it that way. Basically what it is, it can cause kidney failure because just the lack of fluids and stuff in the body. And that's what these players had to get treated for. And athletic trainers weren't consulted by the strength and conditioning coaches or by the or the coaching staff to make sure that these players are going to be physically capable of going through this workout. Now, I know some of you are probably thinking of, oh, toughen up, suck it up. There comes to a point where you can physically harm players if you push them too hard because, well, they want to play, they want to keep their scholarships, so they're going to push themselves. And when their health comes into jeopardy, that's where you cross a line. Now, what these four field hockey players are saying is that, look, the school did nothing in terms of this. And when the players approached BARDA, at least since I was able to read their complaint, when the players approached BARDA, the athletic director, he tried to basically just shrug it off and dismiss their claim of, hey, look, there's what's the equality here? These women's coaches are being fired over some allegations, but the men's coaches are doing the same thing and nothing's happening. Because the players did state in their claim how since 2008, there have been five other female coaches who have been fired by complaints against them, all five of these female coaches were also gay as well. So Tracy Griesbaum is possibly looking to sue the university, from reports that I've read, and that's also something that Barta, the athletic director, said to the four players. It's like, hey, look, she may be looking to sue us. We don't want to get into it. Also, the athletic director tried to coerce the players into kind of backing off by offering them iPads, which I'm feeling is an NCAA violation, because if I know I was a coach, when I was coaching, if I were to offer my players iPads to give to them, not something like it was team issue that they had to turn back into me. If I were to give them iPads, I'm pretty sure I would have broken NCAA rule for improper benefits, but that's neither here nor there. So these players, again, are alleging that a lot of these women coaches over the last 6-7 years have been fired, all of which were gay, and all for claims that offered for doing things that were similar to what men's coaches. Now, the Title IX complaint is, look, if a men's coach can get away with doing something, a women's coach should be away to get away with something. And that's where the balance and the equality comes in. I've witnessed it firsthand where a coach did not break any rules, didn't break university policy, didn't break NCAA rules, never once assaulted or never once sexually assaulted, touched in an inappropriate way, verbally assaulted. But a couple players didn't like the coach's coaching style, and the coach got fired. Or, I'm sorry, was forced to resign. Sadly, this happens, but it's the world we live in today. Griesbaum, in my case, has grounds for lawsuit against the university, especially since these reports are coming back saying she didn't break any NCAA rules, didn't violate university policy. It's more or less, it's like, all right, let's just make sure you and your players are on the same page, you know, chance to grow as a coach a little bit more, and let's have a successful program. But instead, the athletic director just went ahead and terminated the contract anyway. And again, it's not like she was a losing coach. So I would like to see things change. I hate seeing things with women's athletics being so reactionary and so sensitive. If you're going to treat all your student athletes the same, if we want equality, you have to treat the coaches the same, players all the same. It's just what you have to do. And it's just my opinion from being involved in college athletics. The women's coaches should be treated the same level standards as the men's coaches. Just my opinion. Thank you again for listening to this latest edition of the Clearing the Crease podcast. Again, look forward to our special WrestleMania edition of Clearing the Crease. We'll be previewing the card, previewing all the matches going up, and also I'm going to give my predictions on who are going to win these matches, how the outcomes of these. There's a lot of possibilities coming up this Sunday for WrestleMania, but I want you guys to check in and listen to the wrestling podcast for WrestleMania. Thank you again for listening to the Clearing the Crease podcast. Again, find us on Facebook. Clearing the Crease podcast is the name of the page. @CTC podcast is our Twitter handle. Also, go online, our new website, clearingthecrease.com. Check you guys later.